Right now, I'm very happy to welcome to our program Craig Aaron, President and CEO of the Media Democracy Group, Free Press. He's the author of Changing Media, Public Interest Policies in the Digital Age, and has been at media reform issues and the struggle therein for many, many years, leading Free Press into some major victories in recent years. Craig, thank you for joining us again tonight. Appreciate it. Good to talk to you.
Thanks so much for having me back.
As we begin, for some of our listeners who aren't familiar with the work you do at Free Press, just describe a bit about the work that you do there.
Sure. Well, Free Press is a national nonpartisan nonprofit group. We like to say that we fight for your rights to connect and communicate. And we're a group that's dedicated to advocating for the public interest on media and technology issues through a combination of policy research and direct advocacy and lobbying in Washington, combined with popular organizing and mobilization all across the country, trying to give the public a voice in these media and technology policy decisions, make them a part of a conversation they're too often left out of.
And you might also review, we're going to be talking about net neutrality in a moment, but mention a bit about the long struggle that you and allies all across the country undertook to fight for net neutrality, which is now under severe attack from the Trump administration. But review for us that victory that I know you and many others across the country are stepping up to defend at this moment.
Yeah, well, for more than 10 years, we fought to secure real net neutrality protections. Net neutrality is just the idea that when you go online, you should be able to go wherever you want, do whatever you want, download whatever you want, and it's not up to your internet service provider, your phone or your cable company, to decide which websites are going to work and which won't. And it's been a fight now going on 12 years just to get those basic protections in place. But back in 2015, we actually successfully pressured the Obama administration, the Communications Commission, which initially wasn't committing to real net neutrality. We pressured them to actually pass strong net neutrality protections, strong rules on the books, rules that have been upheld in court. It was really a tremendous victory because it came from some incredible public pressure, millions and millions of people contacting the Federal Communications Commission more than it ever contacted an agency like the FCC, and a lot of popular organizing, really taking this once obscure issue and making it an important cause. And so we're tremendously proud of that work and our contribution to it. And unfortunately, here in the Donald Trump administration, really anything and certainly anything good that was accomplished in the Obama years, whether they wanted to do it or not, has come under attack, and net neutrality is no exception. So we expect we may, as soon as tomorrow, finally see the FCC's proposal for how they're going to do away with net neutrality, but we already know what they have in mind, and that is to really completely undo these net neutrality rules and leave people completely at the mercy of their phone or cable company to do whatever they want, whether that's prioritizing content, blocking content, giving special treatment to the shows and services that the big phone and cable companies own. There really won't be anything stopping them. The FCC says sort of public shaming is enough to do it, but they're taking away all of the legal recourse, all of the rules that stop your Comcast, Verizon, and AT&T from abusing the power they have over our communication systems.
Thanks for that, Craig. So the topic we wanted to focus on tonight, and we'll get back to net neutrality before we say goodnight, but the topic we wanted to focus on was recent actions by the FCC, now led by Trump-appointed chairman Ajit Pai. The FCC has voted to remove limits on media ownership, clearing the way for politically conservative Sinclair Broadcast Group and their proposed merger with Tribune Media that your group and others have written about enables the new combined TV network to own 233 local TV stations that can reach 72% of U.S. households. Maybe you can give us sort of the context to understand the FCC action in sort of lifting the limit on ownership in this Sinclair merger?
Yeah, it really is a scandalous set of activities being carried out by the Federal Communications Commission. There are longstanding rules on the books that haven't changed at all since the early 2000s, and really the majority has been held in place since the late 90s, you know, going back in some cases back to the 1970s, limits put on how many television stations one company can own in a market, just how big a footprint one company can have when it comes to local news. And as we know, still the biggest sources for local news are those local broadcasters, your daily newspaper, even in the internet age, when it comes to who's actually got reporters out there doing stories, looking what's happening in the community. It's really dominated by these local outlets. And so the FCC has long had rules saying, hey, we can't have more than one company owning too much media in one market. And there's going to be limits on how many TV stations, what the reach of those TV stations is anyway, across the country as a whole. But ever since the Trump administration came in and the GPI, they've been hammering away at these longstanding limits. And so just last week, they actually voted in a really, unfortunately, sorely undercovered vote to get rid of a bunch of the rules, all designed to benefit this company, Sinclair. There's no question about it. Sinclair has been one of the companies that's been pushing hardest to change these rules, that's been coming up with ways to evade them, and they've now convinced the FCC to do away with the rules that are standing in their way, and in some cases actually reinstate rules that the Obama administration got rid of that were putting limits on how much they could own. So it's a situation where now there is nothing standing in the way of a single television company like Sinclair outright owning two or three stations in a market, no matter how small it is. They've changed the standard by which they would consider waivers among the top-rated stations. So you could own, you know, CBS and ABC or NBC and Fox. That had been prohibited. Now they'll look at it on a case-by-case basis. They've also blessed these so-called sidecar arrangements where a company essentially runs the news operations of one of the other stations. So you're now looking at a situation where one company could control maybe five or six television stations in a given market and start to set themselves up where you only really have one or two dominant voices. They also got rid of limits that said you couldn't own the daily newspaper and a television station or a radio station in the same market. They've absolutely wiped that away. And if you listen to what Sinclair and companies like it actually tell their investors, this is their vision. Very little competition. They want to be able to swap stations with other big chains, swallow up the middle-sized chains, and basically dominate in any given community or in a region where you have one company doing most of the news. And when it comes to Sinclair, they've managed to make it even worse because Sinclair is a company that's notorious for slipping conservative and right-wing propaganda into its newscasts.
That's where I wanted to go next, actually.
Yeah.
Describe for our listeners the Sinclair TV operation. Who owns it and their political spin applied to local news coverage?
Sure. Sinclair started out as a family-owned station in Baltimore that has rapidly expanded over the last several decades. And the head of the company is a guy named David Smith. It's still in his family. But now they already own more than 170 stations all across the country. If they get this deal done, they'll own more than 230 stations because they're trying to take over Tribune, which owns television stations all across the country, including in the biggest markets, bigger markets than Sinclair's ever been in, like New York and Chicago and Los Angeles. But Sinclair is sort of notorious for pushing a, you know, right-wing or reactionary agenda. You know, they make Fox News look moderate in terms of their political coverage. Now, most of their broadcasts will look to you like any other newscast, you know, sports and weather and, you know, here's something that happened locally, but they force all of their stations all across the country, no matter if it's Seattle or San Antonio or Oklahoma City or Salt Lake City, they force them all to run conservative commentary. There are no liberal commentators, no progressive commentators on Sinclair broadcast, but they force everybody to carry conservative commentary from people like Armstrong Williams, who ran Ben Carson's campaign, and a guy named Boris Epstein, who is a Donald Trump campaign spokesperson, who, you know, on broadcasts across Sinclair stations just about every day, is out there to deliver conservative talking points. And they've also slipped this sort of conservative slant into a lot of their newscasts. You might not get it on the local stories, but they now run, essentially a national news operation. And they run segments like the Terrorism Alert Desk, which is, you know, sort of designed to scare their viewers with a lot of stories, mostly, of course, about Muslims and Muslim Americans. Nothing to do with terrorism, usually, but they've got those scary graphics going. And there are numerous other stories where they've slanted that local coverage, whether it's to go after some of the accusers of Senator Roy Moore, Judge Roy Moore, who's running for Senate in Alabama, whether it's their failure to cover things like the attack on the Guardian journalist up in Montana from the congressman who was running for office, and any number of stories, even in their hometown of Baltimore, where they've been caught altering coverage to essentially slander people protesting against police violence, things like this. There's a long, long list of ways that Sinclair has, gamed their newscast to push a conservative agenda. And certainly anytime it gets around politics or the election, that's where their hands get a lot heavier. They famously were going to run the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth movie on their network against John Kerry back in 2004. They preempted episodes of Nightline when they were talking about soldiers who had died in Iraq and Afghanistan, and on and on and on, where they've slanted their coverage to push a conservative agenda. So this is where really the scandal comes in, because you have a Trump administration. Sinclair has been very friendly to the Trump administration. Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, suggested that they had a deal with Sinclair for sort of favorable and uncut coverage during the campaign. So now we have a network that essentially operates as Trump TV being offered huge, huge regulatory favors worth billions of dollars, with the FCC leading the way to clear out regulations, to reinstate some rules that allow them to pretend they own fewer stations when they go to the FCC, but tell a completely different story when they go to Wall Street, and essentially bless all of their bad behavior they've been carrying out for years to evade the FCC rules under this FCC. They think all that's just fine.
We're speaking with Craig Aaron, president and CEO of the Media Democracy Group, Free Press, and we're talking about a vote recently taking place in the FCC to allow a media merger to go forward between Sinclair and Tribune TV. That'll allow Sinclair to own more than 230 stations and reach 72% of U.S. households. Craig, are there any smoking guns regarding an illicit deal between Sinclair and the Trump administration to lift these restrictions on media ownership to do a big favor for Sinclair? Is there anything actionable there that groups like yours could bring to court or a lawsuit?
Well, I mean, I think we're still looking and we're trying to figure it out. What we do have, we certainly have the appearance of a quid pro quo. We can see the favorable coverage. We can see the activities that were, stopped by previous FCCs, and we can see this FCC moving to clear it out. Now, we do have a number of members of Congress who have actually called for an investigation. They've called for the Inspector General of the FCC to look into the chair's dealings with Sinclair. Some have gone as far as to call for him to recuse himself from any actions that involve Sinclair, although so far he's refused to do so. So there is growing political pressure to get to the bottom of this. And there's been some investigative reporting. A big series was done by the New York Times. Mother Jones has an excellent piece in their current issue talking about Sinclair and just how close they are to the administration. So we know that Ajit Pai was out socializing with Sinclair executives in Las Vegas shortly after the election. We know that they brought him in a number of times. We know how much they were cheering the results of the election because they thought they would get these favors literally from day one or day two after the election. Sinclair was going and crowing to its investors that they finally had their guy in there. We know they've done things like had Ajit Pai, the chair of the FCC, on Armstrong Williams' Sunday talk show for an hour, which you just don't normally see FCC chairman on the Sunday shows and, you know, out there talking about how great and independent he was. So certainly they're ideologically aligned. They've been spotted together a lot. And, you know, but you do have this real scandal where really as soon as he got into office, Ajit Pai started moving obstacles to this deal. Very soon after meeting with Sinclair, he began moving forward with loosening of these media ownership rules. And they seem to be working very much in sync to get this done. They gutted a bunch of the media ownership rules last week. Now, we are taking them to court. We've already got one lawsuit headed for the Federal Appeals Court in Washington, D.C., over the way they changed something called the UHF discount, which allowed Sinclair to pretend that some of its stations weren't as big as they actually are. That's going to court, and we're intend to file a lawsuit within the next couple weeks about the changes that the FCC made last week in loosening these longstanding media ownership rules, because we believe they didn't do any of the studies that they've been required to do. They didn't talk to the public. In fact, they rushed this through. If you haven't heard about it, it's because the FCC only gave 3 weeks' notice to this massive change, and they pushed it through with some sort of legal trickery, basically taking a challenge to previous rules, which in many cases did the exact opposite of what the Republican FCC has done, and pushing them through. So we're going to see them in court. That's never a guarantee, but we have won twice before with previous FCCs to stop some of their attempts to loosen media ownership. But, you know, the real problem is that not only are they making these changes, Sinclair's got this pending merger. That could be done in a couple of months, and the FCC has a lot of power to ignore rules, to waive rules, to really clear the way for these guys. And rumor is that within a matter of days, they may be starting a proceeding to get rid of any national caps on ownership, which is one of the only things still restraining Sinclair. If they get rid of that, then it's just open season. Sinclair will buy whatever they want. I think you'll see other big players like Rupert Murdoch, companies like Nexstar and Tegna, starting to move in and swallowing up more stations. So anytime you allow one of these big waves of media consolidation, it's always followed by others saying, now we have to do a big deal. And that's how you get fewer and fewer voices, fewer and fewer independent stations. And if you are one of those independent stations, it's just that much harder to compete because a big conglomerate like Sinclair is undercutting you everywhere you go, trying to sell ads at a lower rate, offering package deals and things you can't compete with. And eventually it forces people out of business or has them cutting their news budgets. So you end up with fewer voices, fewer reporters actually covering communities, and you get all the results that these rules were, you know, intended to try to prevent.
Craig, you've studied the intersection of media and politics for a long time. What's the net political effect, do you think, of having all these local stations, sort of, as a beacon of this conservative voice and commentary going out constantly to all these local markets? Does that have the capacity to change American politics on a local or regional level?
We've witnessed it. Yeah. I think we're witnessing it right now. The fact that if you turn on a Sinclair broadcast or a Sinclair commentary, when it comes to not necessarily local issues, but national issues, it's like an alternate universe from listening to NPR or, you know, even watching the nightly news. You have the kind of slanted coverage that people might be familiar with from like a Fox News channel, absolutely going to bat for the Trump White House, for the Republican Party, echoing the talking points, pushing the narratives, ignoring the stories that make Republican leaders look bad. So you've got a company that very clearly wants to slant its coverage to benefit one political party over the other, hasn't been very shy about it. And if they were one of eight stations in a market, we could probably, you know, not worry about that, look the other way, have actual competing voices and battle for ideas. But when you have this company owning 230 stations and reaching three quarters of the country, then you've got a problem. And I think we've seen time and time again with media ownership, when all the radio ownership limits got destroyed, that's what gave rise to Rush Limbaugh, right-wing talk radio, obviously had a huge impact on our national political discourse. You're seeing it again here at the local level, where you could see certainly Sinclair, you probably also see Fox expand. You know, generally they don't dictate as much political coverage to their local stations, but it's, you know, they still air national Fox programming and things like that. So suddenly I think it has a huge impact on our democracy, and then really just for the ability to get information about what's happening in their communities. And you know, one thing we've seen Sinclair do is they slant their coverage, and they also really profit from a very broken electoral system. These local broadcasters, the way they still make their money in this day and age is largely through political ads. So they have a lot of interest in seeing that system continue, and really, you know, even sometimes cutting back on news in order to air more political ads, depending on where you live. So I think it has very, very dangerous ramifications for our democracy, and on a very basic level, we benefit when there are multiple newsrooms out there competing, whatever their ideological alignment might be. You want your reporters out there competing for scoops. You want different versions of stories. You want to challenge official narratives. And that's not really something that companies like Sinclair have shown that they're interested in doing.
Well, thanks for that, Craig. I wanted you to assess for us the contrast between an announcement we heard today from the Trump Department of Justice. There had been this proposed merger between AT&T and Time Warner. The Trump Justice Department basically said they will oppose and sue to prevent that merger from going forward. Now, Donald Trump had, during the presidential campaign, discussed his opposition to such a merger. And I'm wondering, in terms of the red light for AT&T Time Warner versus this lifting of media ownership rules in the FCC, are there inconsistencies there that we could determine may be politically driven?
Well, there are certainly really big questions, and this puts media reformers like myself in something of a bind, because there is no question the AT&T Time Warner merger should be stopped. And I looked at the lawsuit today filed by the Justice Department, and, it's very strong, and it makes a strong case for why we should not allow this kind of concentration, that we shouldn't have one company, you know, being a dominant wireless provider, a big provider of home internet, the owner of DirecTV. You know, that's the huge amount of power. You add into that company HBO, CNN, TNT, TBS, and you have a media behemoth that should not be allowed. So this is a strange situation where the Trump administration, the Trump Justice Department anyway, is actually doing the right thing. This merger should be blocked. But the problem we have is that because of everything Donald Trump has done, because of how he's talked about the media, because of how he's threatened press freedom, there's very good reason to be suspicious that this could be politically motivated, and that it is Trump hoping to put pressure on CNN that is holding up this deal. So the Justice Department has to find ways to show, if indeed it's true, that that's not what they're doing. And I think the lawsuit, if you look at it, CNN's only mentioned a couple of times, I think it does a pretty good case. It indicates that this actually came up from the staff level and the antitrust lawyers. But AT&T, of course, is running around and saying that's not the case, and it very much serves their interests. So what Donald Trump has managed to achieve is he has turned AT&T into sort of a free speech hero, and they're trying to milk that for all it's worth. So it's a very complicated situation. You know, personally, I'd love to see this kind of scrutiny being put to AT&T and Time Warner. That's exactly what they should be doing to Sinclair, which is another big media merger. But you're not wrong to look at this deal and say, well, how come in this case they're looking so closely at AT&T and Time Warner with a division that's somewhat critical of the administration while absolutely rubber stamping the Sinclair deal? That's a big problem, and it's going to be a big problem for them when they go to court. Where I kind of come down in the end is we've got to be able to hold two ideas in our head at the same time, and we need to be very skeptical of the Trump administration, and we need to be very skeptical of AT&T. And honestly, we need a world where we're both blocking mergers and protecting that neutrality in the open internet, That's what we should be building toward. But certainly, the Trump administration is talking out of both sides of its mouth right now, by on the one hand saying, hey, we can't allow this AT&T merger. They're going to really be able to squeeze their competitors and raise prices on everyone. And then you turn around at the FCC down the street, they're saying, oh, get rid of net neutrality, it's not a problem, and clearing their way for them to undermine their competitors. So this is sort of reality in the Trump administration. I'll be really happy if this merger is blocked. It's a really bad deal for all of us. And I hope it can be done for the right reasons.
Thank you for all this really valuable information, Craig, and the important work you're doing. Do let our listeners know how they can get involved in this fight with Sinclair, as well as the important issues that we talked about at the outset of the program in terms of opposing FCC rules change on net neutrality and the real disbanding of the broadband subsidies. A lot of other issues at the FCC that you're working on.
There's a lot happening right now, and it seems like something new every day. So I would definitely urge people to go to freepress.net. If you sign up there, share your email address, we'll definitely alert you when things are going on. And we also lots of information about ways to get involved. Public pressure on the FCC really does make a difference, not only in slowing them down, but in helping us build the legal cases that show they're not listening to the public. Calls to your members of Congress, incredibly important. And just letting your friends and neighbors know these things are happening. There's a lot happening at Senior Lineup for tonight's show. So many important things happening all at once. I hope this is one people are really paying attention to, though, because the free and open internet, the media system, that's how we find out about all these other things. And when they fall down on the job, it's a really big problem. So join us at freepress.net, and we'll definitely keep you up to date.
Thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us tonight, Craig, and good luck on the important work you're doing every day. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Scott. Really appreciate the time.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Craig Aaron, President and CEO of the Media Democracy Group, Free Press.